This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Another hurricane season is upon us, and since we are still picking up the pieces from 2005 storms, perhaps it's time to take a look at the health of our oceans and its contributions to our weather patterns. Here are some of the facts, folks. 2005 was the hottest year on record. There were a record-setting 27 named hurricanes in 2005. 400,000 square miles of Arctic sea ice has melted in the last 30 years. The United States is number one in emissions of greenhouse gases. Our environment is on a downhill slide, and it's happening faster than you think. The Greenland ice sheets are melting twice as fast now than they were in 1996. 53 cubic miles versus 22 cubic miles. That much fresh water being added to our oceans not only threatens our coastlines, but could disrupt how our oceans operate and in turn help control our climate. Journalist Julia Whitty published an in-depth article in the March-April issue of Mother Jones magazine detailing the damage we are doing to our oceans. Producer Kathy Golden speaks with Julia Whitty about that article.
Thank you for being back with us on Voices of Our World. The most recent piece you've written for Mother Jones is The Fate of the Ocean. And the article, unfortunately, backs up a lot of one's fears and teaches. But there's also a great deal of, if I may say, poetry in the beauty of some of the statements that you've written in here. Just quite an article, just beautiful. Tell me about how the experience itself came about for you.
I wanted to hook up with some researchers who were studying what we know of as the ocean conveyor belt. And this is the series of currents that run at the surface and run underwater that connect all the oceans of the world so that basically oceanographers recognize that there's only one world ocean. There was some very interesting research being done looking at a critical part of the ocean conveyor belt in the North Atlantic. And so I hooked up with Woods Hole and went out with them.
I remember actually getting in trouble as a child in school because I had failed to, on a geography test, remember a particular name of a body of water. And I remember saying to the teacher, but isn't it all kind of connected? Isn't it kind of all one body? Why does everything have a separate name when it looks to me, if you look at the globe, that this is all one unit, the ocean?
That's great. And I think a lot of kids actually instinctively figure that out. We have rather arbitrarily made these separate oceans, when in fact, scientifically, they're not terribly separate. So that a drop of rain that falls in the North Atlantic will emerge 1,200 years later at the surface of the North Pacific, having traveled all the way around Antarctica and gone 20,000 feet or more deep. So these ocean basins are completely connected, and what happens in one is affected by all others.
And so the most recent spill in northern Alaska, even as Exxon still hasn't paid their fine for the Exxon Valdez spill so many years back, any one damaging thing we do connects with everything else that's happening on our planet.
It's taking us a long time to really grapple with that reality. You know, there's nowhere you can go in the ocean now that you can't find traces of sort of tar globules or the residue of oil from spills and natural seeps and ships discharging their ballast water and all the places that this dirty, oily stuff comes from. There's no part of the ocean left that it remains pristine from that or any other form of human pollution.
At the end of this trip, what would the five most important things for our listeners, what would that be that they should know right now?
I think, obviously, the global climate change issues are happening faster and more vehemently in a way in the ocean than they are even on land. And so we're having the warming of the ocean, which is working in conjunction with the warming of the atmosphere. And these two efforts are nibbling away, as we know, at all the ice sheets. And we're seeing this in the Arctic. We're also seeing it in the Antarctic. And we're seeing it in anywhere where glacial ice meets ocean water. And in fact, it's startling scientists at the rapidity with which these ice masses are melting. And this is leading to some fairly pessimistic scenarios of what might lay ahead. But not only does melting of the Arctic and the Antarctic have bad effects on those places, obviously animals like polar bears who depend on ice are suffering already. We're seeing evidence of starvation in polar bears, and we're seeing some evidence of even cannibalism, and we're seeing evidence of polar bears drowning because there's no ice to come ashore onto and rest. So there's a lot of problems with the ice melt itself, but as we introduce all this melted ice into the ocean, we're also changing the chemistry of the ocean. And the ocean has, for most of our evolution, had a somewhat similar signature of how much is saline and how much is fresher water. And as we melt all these ice caps, we're actually increasing some of the fresher water into the ocean. And that changes ocean chemistry, and that has the potential to break down this ocean conveyor belt, this very intricate series of currents that interconnect all the oceans of the world, running both at the surface and subsurface. And we know historically at times past that when the ocean conveyor belt has broken down or changed significantly, that we've had massive climate changes around the globe. Furthermore, the increasing amounts of carbon dioxide, which appear not only in our atmosphere but also in our oceans, which take up an awful lot of carbon dioxide, are potentially going to affect the ability of some of the ocean's tiniest little creatures, from planktons and corals, to be able to make their shells or their bones. And as the oceans take up more CO2, they become more acidic. It changes the pH level, and these little creatures can't make their shells. And a study that was done out of Australia showed that if you took some of these little planktonic animals and you popped them in water with the acidity that we think will exist in the world ocean by the year 2100, their shells dissolved within 48 hours. This is very bad news. Additionally, I want to just say fisheries are a big problem and pollution are other big problems.
Carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere are now the highest in 150,000 years. And CO2 emissions are now 12 times higher than they were in 1900. Well, we have the forests and the oceans to thank for not seeing the effects of all the greenhouse gas buildup sooner. They're known as carbon sinks, sponges that absorb CO2. Seawater also absorbs heat. The two, acting in concert, are helping to slow down the rise in global temperature. Question is, how long can the ocean maintain this equilibrium before it collapses? If you're just joining us, this is Voices of Our World. Let's return to journalist Julia Witte.
And when you think about in the long haul of history, the arc of industrialization of the planet, we're talking about changes we made to this planet in such a short span of time.
This is the part that is alarming to pretty much every scientist, is the speed at which we have made these changes, and now even within just the last 2 or 3 years, the speed with which these changes are now taking off with a life of their own. And we've been full throttle ahead on a gigantic aircraft carrier, and we are now realizing that we not only have to slow it down, we have to turn it around. And you know how long it takes to turn around those giant ships, and that's what we're up against right now. And so far, we haven't even put on the brakes. 2005, we had the highest levels of CO2 emissions on the planet. We've been talking about the problems with carbon dioxide for over 20 years. 20 years later, we still haven't even brought those numbers down.
But I often think, if it isn't happening right under one's nose and it doesn't feel connected to me, a mushy person like me who's a vegetarian because of my extreme love for animals, the polar bear thing alone upsets me. But we fail to see our interconnectedness sometimes. That's why people can't look at these things and feel the alarm that would help them resolve to let's start to fix this, you know?
It is hard. I mean, I argue in this article for Mother Jones magazine that, you know, there's a problem that we react very strongly to some of the things that are done on land and things we could do 100 years ago you can't really get away with anymore. But we're still treating the oceans the way we treated the land 100 or more years ago. And so the things that we're doing in the oceans would never be allowed if we were doing them on land, the problems with fishing and pollution and so forth. And it's hard. It's hard for us to see beyond the horizon. We stand on the beach. We see 3 miles out. That's it. And we think it goes forever, and we think it's infinite. But in fact, in the last 25 years, we really have seen the limits of the ocean. And I hope that people are going to start realizing that this is our homeland security dealing with these issues. They need to be important issues, and our lawmakers and legislators need to understand that. I could not believe that this January I listened to the President's State of the Union address and the Democratic response. None of them even mentioned this. I mean, in this day and age that we aren't openly talking about these realities and what we're going to do about them, it really amazes me. And that's the part that I find really depressing and alarming. We need to convince these legislators, we the people, not the lobbyists, need to reach out to these legislators and let them know that this stuff is important. Because polls show that people do find this stuff to be very important.
Well, right now we're struggling with an administration that is clearly pro-business. They would much rather protect corporate America than the oceans surrounding America. And so they have, in some cases, dictated to certain agencies that they should soft play, if you will, global warming. And yet, things like this determine where and how we rebuild New Orleans. If it's going to be underwater in 50 years, we have to think about what we're doing there in giving these people back their home.
And we're not only talking about New Orleans. I mean, the sea level rise forecasts are pretty onerous. And in the worst case scenarios, if we imagine the melting of the West Antarctic ice sheet, which scientists had thought would be very unlikely, but now are beginning to see that it's actually starting to have some problems associated with it. And they're talking about global sea level rise of up to 23 feet. And if you look at the map of the world, the entire eastern seaboard up to and over Washington, D.C. is underwater under that scenario. So it's not just New Orleans. It does require us to think long-term, and it requires us to think in terms of things that we haven't proven yet that we're very good about thinking about. You know, these are commodities that are really owned by the global community, not just human. And how do we manage these things? The current administration still has a Wild West mentality of just go out and take whatever you can as fast as you can before the other guy gets it. But we've seen where this leads us. It's led us to our present predicament, and this is not a place that's going to lead us into a good future for anybody on Earth.
The article is very disturbing, but we need to be disturbed, don't we?
Somehow, I guess we do need to be disturbed, because complacency hasn't gotten us anywhere. Well, it's brought us here, and this is not a good place to be. So if it takes us being disturbed to wake up and get active about this, then I think that is what we need.
For strong winds that blow lonely, seven seas that run high, all these things that don't change, come what may.
It's the year 2050. Where will you be? Driving a hybrid car or standing knee-deep in water? Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us, or you can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL.
For strong winds, for strong.
Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Hugh Kaufman and Julia Witte are just some of the voices of our world. I'm your host and producer for this week's show, Eileen Bott. You heard music today by Joan Baez. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org, where you can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, answer our weekly question, or subscribe to our podcast. Please go to www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll, or to try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.